Support for Boston Public Radio comes from Cambridge Savings Bank. CSB is committed to improving the financial well-being of local small businesses through financial education and banking services. Learn more at cambridgesavings.com. Member FDIC.
Hamilton. Registration at curealz.org/2018symposium.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan live from our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library. If you thought fatbergs were bad, and if you don't know what they are, look them up. There could be something worse. Manure lagoons. That's what they are, Marjorie. Okay. They're basically open pits that hog farmers use to contain, and I'm sorry, excrement. And in North Carolina, where hog farms are being flooded, the state is literally becoming the cesspool of America. Could this be yet another reason to stop eating meat? Joining us to talk about this, how whole milk could now be good for your heart, Marjorie is thrilled, and maybe how working at Whole Foods could be bad for it, meaning your heart, is food writer Corby Kummer. Corby's a senior editor at The Atlantic, a restaurant critic, and senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and Policy. Hello, Corby Kummer.
Hello there.
Hello, Corby Kummer. So apparently this manure, this gross manure problem, is already happening. I was listening to reports last night and reading this morning about how we already have totally contaminated water in North Carolina from the overflow of these hog and poultry farms.
Well, you know, you may not know about manure lagoons, and they may sound gross to you.
Well, they do.
They are very gross. But if you go to Iowa or North Carolina, they are a fact of life. And when you go on the highways, you see them and you smell them. Your side. They're absolutely apparent. There's nothing hidden about them. And then if you live near them, you are probably a person of color because there's a kind of effective redlining in these farm states where the only people who live adjacent to these lagoons are poor people, and they're often of color. And there was a great piece that we talked about last year about this effective racism and redlining. But what were they doing ahead of Florence? They were racing to spray the aerosolized manure onto their fields so that they could try to drain enough space from their manure lagoons to account for the runover of anticipated Florence. And what they were doing was exceeding the state limit of spraying manure on their fields to get ahead of it. And it's happening.
But also it's happening.
I don't understand. It was the spraying making it worse?
No. The spraying is legal.
So this
is an amazing fact that they are allowed to spray a certain amount of manure. I mean, it's good fertilizer. There's probably chemicals in the fertilizer runoff, yes, but it's just the stench and the toxic effects, and people have horrible lung diseases if they live right near this. But that spraying is legal. What they were doing was racing to try to drain enough space from the lagoons so that they wouldn't overflow when the rains came.
And when they do, water supplies are poisoned and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, there's all kinds of runoff anyway from these. There's supposed to be all kinds of laws about the concrete not going into the earth, but every year you read of leaches and breaks in these pits. You know, it's a charming situation. So they leak, they go right into the runoff, they go right into your water.
By the way, if people
and your
don't
shower.
Appreciate the extent of this, animal agriculture produces a mere 10 billion pounds of wet waste a year in North Carolina, Marjorie.
And there's something else to say about this. It's a reason that Smithfield bought China bought Smithfield ham because as well as this kind of red line I was talking about for people of color who are the ones who are effectively forced to live next to these things, China is outsourcing all this pollution to the U.S. by buying Smithfield and saying, you can have all the environmental damage. We'll just buy the pigs. Thanks.
And they're not taking our recycling anymore either. So it's like a win-win for China and a lose-lose for us.
Right.
We're talking to Corby Kummer. What Marjorie really wanted Corby about here today was to confirm her
some good news.
Dairy behaviors. Now, we talked to you a couple of years ago, I think, about how a lot of nutritionists were saying that whole milk is actually good on the obesity front, I guess because of the notion that you're satiated or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's a growing body of experts who were saying, forget the skim, forget the 2%, that sort of thing. But now there are studies that also say that whole milk, a whole fat or whatever it's called.
And yogurt.
Dairy products are actually good for your heart in addition to good for your girth. Is that what it's happening?
It's not that it's good for your heart. It's that they don't do damage. So I noticed that Marjorie has hauled out a clip from 2014.
She did.
From National Public Radio where there was this, you know, piece of good news that it was okay to have full fat dairy. The underlying principle is when you eat fat, it makes you full. The feelings of satiety reach you
sooner.
Is that
how you pronounce it? Satiety. We were debating this all morning. Is it satiety?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Look at me like I have two heads. I didn't know how to say it.
Satiation, satiety. But it isn't a word we use every night at
no,
the dinner table.
No,
could you please wait till my feelings of satiety
kick in? You know why? Because I've never experienced satiety. That's why I haven't used it.
That's important. It's time for you to have some more full-fat yogurt. And
but
so,
it's true. It's true, I think.
Sure, it's true. I mean, in part of the paradox of all this is it does take 20 minutes for these feelings of satiety to reach your brain and start shutting off your hunger. So you have to be careful about how much you eat waiting for that 20 minutes.
But I understand that. I don't understand the heart. I totally get when Marjorie and I and you started talking about this years ago vis-a-vis one's weight. And I don't understand why they say, to use your characterization, there's no more harm done by whole milk and whole, you know.
So there's a new study in The Lancet, which is what we're looking at in Time magazine, reported on September 11th, that says that there wasn't an association. In fact, there was lower risk of premature death from heart disease and stroke for people who ate full-fat yogurt. 21 countries, 5 continents, 136,000 adults, 9 years of follow-up.
But I thought saturated fat's supposed to be bad for you, for your heart. Isn't it for your cholesterol?
Yeah, well, the thing is, I work at Tufts, where our dean, Darish Mozafarian, is still, he's kind of in favor of full-fat yogurt because of the satiety and nuts, but researchers at the Harvard School of Public Health are still against it. It's still an open issue because these studies are association. They're saying, gee, that seems associated with lower risk of cardiovascular disease. What nobody argues is that if you don't reduce fat in this misbegotten notion that I have to eat a low-fat diet to be thin, because when you do that, you usually make up for it in sugar and carbohydrates
yes.
and stuff that make you fat. So this is all part of the big picture. Don't be afraid of eating full-fat foods. Olive oil, which, you know, if you're at Harvard, you might prefer. Yogurt or olive oil, which you're at Tufts, you might think you're just fine. But all of them make you feel full. How's that better for
it
than
does.
Satiety?
Satiety is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, thank you, Jim.
Okay.
But you know, Corby, even though you say it is true, you have to wait a while, 20 minutes, whatever it is, before you have those feelings of fullness. But if you eat a full-fat yogurt at 10 o'clock in the morning, you won't be hungry again for a long time. That's what I've noticed, as opposed to eating these ridiculous low-fat yogurts that are full of sugar, which don't do anything to curb your hunger.
In fact, they can cause this drop and make you hungry later. Yes, I have adopted the full fat.
Me too.
I've gotten that religion, and I use it a lot with nuts. I've really gotten into nuts in a big way.
You know what the problem with nuts is? I buy nuts in bulk from Whole Foods.
Don't
we're
you have
about
like
Whole Foods
thousands
in a second.
Of pistachio
no,
nut
but here's
shells
the problem. I do.
In your car?
I do. But every couple of years, I have it detailed, and they throw them out. The problem is, at least with me, the satiety issue. Now I'm going to say it until I get it sort of imprinted on my brain. You buy it like a pint of nuts, and you eat a pint of nuts. I mean, nuts are good for you in limited. Why are you looking at me like
because
this?
Because it's as if you had a monitor attached to my computer last night at about midnight when I got back from teaching at Tufts Friedman. And I just went through an entire package of nuts I had secreted
in the
freezer.
That's exactly my point. That's a real problem, isn't it?
Well, they're awfully good.
Yeah, it's like potato chips. You can't just eat one. It's very difficult.
You know what you do? I have a friend who actually prepares. Talk about anal. When you buy the nuts, he puts them into little packages of what the – what was the thing that when Obama
President
was joking?
President Obama,
seven or 11 almonds. Whatever
I often think of that as I go into my 30th or 40th.
Okay. We're talking to Corby Cummer. So there's an effort to unionize the workers at Whole Foods. It makes Mr. Mackey unhappy. This is because of the Bezos
Amazon
takeover, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it was John Mackey who called the attempted unionization of a Whole Foods store in Madison, Wisconsin, which is sort of a heartland of liberalism and has one of the best farmers markets in the country. And when they tried to unionize in 2013, he told Yahoo Finance, He compared labor unions to herpes. Yeah. So he really doesn't like labor unions.
He didn't like the Affordable Care Act either, by the way, for all of us Whole Foods groupies.
No, he's a weird, outspoken libertarian. But now the Whole Food workers have every reason to worry that the back office stock-taking jobs are all disappearing because they're going to be automated. That's part of the Amazon takeover. It's just going to happen. And so they wrote a strong letter, which the New Food Economy, a very good website, excerpted and got, dated September 26th, in which they said, you know, we believe that team members and stakeholders are just as equal as customers, which is not apparently what, you know, Whole Foods is going to think. And it's time to hold Mackey accountable in supporting his team members, as they call workers. And they're offering no health insurance, meager severance package, and then the chance to reapply for their positions at a much lower wage.
Prior to Bezos, by the way, Whole Foods was generally voted one of the better employers, right, despite Mackey's
odd
politics.
Yeah, but we have to say, in fairness to Amazon, that they had instituted a just-in-time ordering system that was leaving shelves bare, greatly demoralizing produce managers, making the stores look terrible. It was part of what Mackey was trying to do to get ahead of a takeover. And he performed a lot of corporate machinations to keep his job during and after the Amazon takeover. So I'm not a fan of his.
We're talking to Corby Comer, our food guy.
So this was a very interesting piece. It starts with a big picture of a cheesecake factory in the front page. And it talks about how, it's from Bloomberg, how eating habits are changing. More people than ever are eating at home because it's obviously cheaper. But it's also have to do with habits.
So this was a really interesting piece, mostly because it was about the economy. So it had this idea at the beginning that people are eating less at restaurants because they want healthier food. And it's so much nicer and pleasanter to sit down with your family over a home-cooked meal. That's all true. But the real reason is that people don't want to pay the money
right.
to go to restaurants with their family. It's particularly about parents with young children. They don't have the money to go to these restaurants, and so they are finding ways of making food for themselves. And it's good for meal kit makers. I'm still puzzled by the whole meal kit phenomenon, but Walmart has gotten into it and bought a big company that makes them. Whole Foods is starting its own. Chick-fil-A is having, you know, why would you bother to make your own Chick-fil-A dinner? But they're selling them.
But it's not just hurting mid to higher end restaurants. They're also hurting fast
food. Oh, it's hurting fast food.
So what's in the restaurant industry? I know it's not monolithic, needless to say. This is borderline crisis. I don't mean to create a dramatic story out of one that isn't. But the number of people, the number of times the average person, it was something like, 100, 200? I was stunned by this, actually. Where is it here? The latest peak in restaurant going was in 2000. The average American dined out 216 times a year. I assume that means if you went, like, to the Newsfeed Cafe in the morning to get turkey bacon
or
muffin
lunch.
And a cup of coffee.
Right.
So it's still a lot. And that number fell pretty dramatically from 2000 to 2017 to 185. That's like a 15% drop. That's a big
right.
deal.
What I thought when I saw this... traffic for the industry was down 1.1% in July, the 29th straight month of declines.
Wow.
Was that last year, at the end of the year, we talked about a story saying that a large economic downturn and market crash is always preceded by a year or two of fast food and food chain restaurants falling and declining.
Oh, great. That's
and
happy
so as
news.
Soon as I saw this 29th straight month, I thought, okay, let's sell stocks and get cash and just wait for the big one.
So but what are they doing? What's the reaction? I mean, I started...
They're raising prices.
I think I interrupted myself. Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, they're raising prices.
Which is going to probably cause more people to stay home.
Probably so, but McDonald's has reported sales increases, but that's because they raised their prices above the board in their menu, so they can't take as many loss leaders.
Remember the Ground Rounds, those places that people used to...
I do.
They don't exist anymore?
I don't think they do. They used to have a great one up in Cleveland Circle, but they had a brilliant idea for when you are broke and your kids are little and you're playing for daycare and the mortgage and everything. You only pay as much as your kid weighed.
Oh, that's right.
So if your kid weighed 45 pounds, you paid 45 cents. If your kid weighed, you know, most of them did not weigh.
Did they have a scale? How did they check
They had a scale. Yeah, you go in and you put the little kids on the scale. And the great thing was you were paying nothing for their meals, essentially. So you'd sit there drinking.
You know what the problem was?
Bringing up your liquor bill.
They had those in Philadelphia. My mother couldn't afford to take me, you know? Think
that,
about that.
That is a Jewish joke.
That is a Jewish joke. Thank you very much.
Yes, very good.
I'll be in the lounge on Thursdays, and you should try the veal, by the way, if you're there.
Yeah, but that was a great idea. I think more places should do that because I spent most of my childhood at the Ground Round. I loved it.
Didn't they give free popcorn, too? Was that part of the deal at
the Ground Round?
Or am I confused?
I think so.
You know, but what I'm thinking is, if only school nurses could institute this, because when the Massachusetts State Department of Health was trying to make it mandatory for school nurses to report body mass index to parents of children in middle school, I think, the nurses were saying, we don't have time to weigh students, we don't have time to fill it in and send the parents, we're not going to do this. So if only they had, like, contracted with Ground Round to go into these communities.
Yeah, it was kind of a cool idea. So Corby Cummer, our food man, moving on to a really horrible story. Apparently there is a second farm crisis coming upon us, and this very disturbing story talks about how farmers are calling this farm aid line and this hotline and dealing with people who are totally bankrupt, who the spouses are survivors of those who committed suicide. What's going on?
So this is a very awful story in Civil Eats, part of a whole series they're doing about farms. The larger take-home points are there's been huge consolidation in farms. If you have a small farm, you almost certainly can't survive. For 4 years, the price of milk to produce it, I think, has been $1.93, and the price that they get averages about $1.40. So you have been forced to sell milk at below cost. There have been evidently soybean and corn. There was a boom in the first half of this very decade, but in the last 3 years. And so farmers were doing what they do when there's a boom, which is they make repairs in their dilapidated equipment they haven't been able to afford to pay in years, and they take out loans to keep operating. But farms in the Midwest and Pennsylvania, because it didn't specifically mention New England in this story, banks are stopping giving loans. They're saying, sorry, just you have no credit. You have no more collateral left.
To family farmer types,
this
correct?
This is to small farms. Family farms, because it's the large farms that can afford to weather these downturns. And another thing that anybody who studies family farms knows, but this is an eye-popping figure, 70% of farmers make less than a quarter of their income from farming. It's always a second or third or fourth job. They need health insurance. They need other stuff. Only 46% have a positive net income from their operations. So you see, it has to be really big farms. And then the soybean and corn boom, what really put the death, put the nail in the coffin? It was Trump's trade war. So when he instituted this trade war earlier in this year, Canada and China retaliated where they knew Trump's base of support was, these farm states, and started putting tariffs on soybeans and corn. So China and India and Canada are buying them from South America.
You know, Marjorie read the title of this story called Is the Second Farm Crisis Upon Us? When was the first farm crisis, and how do we get out of it?
It was the 1980s. There was a ton of consolidation. There were a lot of loans, but mostly it was consolidation. And the sort of heartbreaking figure is that some of these farms that managed to patch it together and get loans for 30 years from the 1980s have been unable to pass it on to the children who wish they could take over the farms because the whole family's in debt, still trying to get itself out of the debt of the original farm crisis in our lifetimes, which is the 1980s.
Can I do a shout-out to somebody, by the way? The story starts by saying Joe Schroeder works as a farm advocate for Farm Aid. Farm Aid is a group that is based in Somerville. It's run by a good friend of mine who has become a friend of yours, Carolyn Mugar.
You've been a big supporter
of
them.
Well, a big supporter. I mean, I'm a supporter. It was founded by Willie Nelson 20-some years ago. I'm actually going to the concert with my younger daughter in Connecticut this weekend. This is the thing. The board is Willie Nelson, John Mellencamp, Dave Matthews, and who did I leave out? Neil Young? Did I say Neil Young? I have gone to the – I don't know if you've ever been to the press conference the day before the concert. I did it when they were out at whatever the thing is in Mansfield, a couple of
– Topsfield, maybe.
No, it wasn't. When they, you know, what's the name of the center? It used to be the Comcast Center, whatever the hell it was.
Tweeter Center?
This one's in Hartford, Connecticut. There, I have never heard famous people more eloquently defend – a livelihood and a way of life and the importance of family farmer than these four huge celebrities do. And so if people care about family farms and not just these huge agribusinesses, check out farmaid.org. It is really a spectacular organization. Great Woods, thank you very much. Jason just typed. It's a spectacular organization that really is the organization dedicated to small family farmers.
I also
assume we all care about.
That is great. And I also looked up this guy, Joe Schroeder, who's the Farm Aid guy who takes the calls, offers suicide hotlines.
I know.
Because he's been doing this for 10 years. He's able to send out $500 checks. That's what Farm Aid does to keep these people alive. But it's one husband, the farmer, you know, so many farmers are women, like the majority in Massachusetts, over 60% are women. This woman was saying that they had hidden their car in the barn so that if he stops breathing, that she can take him to the hospital.
Oh my God.
And he survives. He lives on an oxygen tank, and they couldn't pay the electricity to keep the oxygen tank going. And
they hid the car because they were worried about being repossessed.
And this guy, Joe Schroeder, has been unable to check in on them because they can't pay their phone. So these are really desperate straits he has to deal with every day.
By the way, if this is a fundraiser for Farm Aid, this concert.
Yeah, I think it's sold out.
Where is it?
It's in Hartford.
I bet you can still donate online.
But you can donate to the organization. But what they do is they do a huge concert every year where it's the four board members who are obviously huge stars and maybe 10 other pretty prominent performers. It's a day-long thing. But what they do is, and I don't mean to belabor this, but it's really such a beautiful thing to see. You know, there are a lot of celebrities who do things for causes, but you feel there's a distance between them. You go to this thing Friday, which is the day before, which is where they have a press conference, and the family farmers who are there, who are involved in the group, they're friends with the Neil Youngs and the Will. I mean, there's this mixing and collaborative effort that is really so real and so great. And they do great work. So, again, I rarely do shout-outs for groups, but farmaid.org is as good as they get.
Thank you very much, Corby
Kummer. Corby, it's good to see you.
As always. Our award-winning food writer, Corby Kummer, joins us every week. He's also a senior editor at The Atlantic, a restaurant critic, and a senior lecturer at Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and Policy. Thank you very much, Corby.
Good to see you, Corby.
Coming up. And now that the fires are out, who's going to pay for the destruction and long-term consequences of the Merrimack Valley gas explosions? Our Boston Globe contributor Shirley Leung joins us for that and more. She's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
I'm Barbara Howard. Later.